Hey everyone, Kendrick and Josh here. If you're listening to this, you're hearing an old episode we uploaded to the feed that was recorded prior to joining forces with the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network. You can listen to these old episodes and hear how the Star Trek connection and our Willis ranking system came to be. You can find out how Josh's oven works, hear us make mistakes, and get corrected repeatedly.
If you're loving this, we'd love for you to also check out other podcasts on the network, since they're all great. If you're interested in finding out more about this particular podcast, head on to williswaypod.com for more info, or email us at williswaypod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and enjoy.
The year is 1989. George H.W. Bush begins his first year of his presidency. Nintendo celebrates its 100-year anniversary, and Bruce Willis releases his fourth feature film, In Country.
So get together, have a few laughs.
Uh-oh! Shit, lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Lady, put the freaking gun down on the ground right now. Take your shot across the freaking street and say that dude's gonna get you!
Hello and welcome to Where There's a Willis, There's a Way, a film podcast about the multitude of works by Bruce Willis. My name is Josh Carter, and with me as always is...
Kendrick Martin. So Josh, we made it to episode 4.
Yes, we did. We survived all the way there.
With the current state of the world, I feel like every episode in and of itself is a little bit of a celebration. So congratulations.
It is. Yeah. Thank you. Likewise.
We talked last time about we were recording during a armed insurrection that took place in the United States Capitol. By the time this episode's released, the United States will have a new president.
That is true.
Signed, sealed, and delivered. So, speaking of our current times, did you hear the news about our main man and his mask-wearing fiasco?
Oh, mask-wearing fiasco. I'm guessing that means that the mask-wearing wasn't happening and that was the fiasco?
Correct. So if you out there are listening from either A foreign planet, or B, the far future, we are currently in a global pandemic. And as most global pandemics tend to do, they have requirements. And one of these requirements is you have to wear a mask or you are an asshole. And Bruce Willis was caught going into a Rite Aid pharmacy without a mask on and they kicked him out. And to his credit, he has come out publicly and said that it was one of his low points and he apologized for not wearing a mask. And several people have kind of pointed out that he literally could have just pulled up his hoodie cover or done any attempt of putting a mask on, but he did not.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, he was even wearing a bandana in that photo, I think.
Yeah. And I haven't seen if he's made any public, he doesn't seem to come out, speaking in public very often, but I haven't seen him come out strongly against mask wearing. It was a blunder. I can't imagine what it was like being in that store when that happened. But Bruce, Willis must have needed something in the Rite Aid.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, pretty rich people need stuff too.
Yeah, I guess everybody needs toilet paper and condoms. The only two thing a Rite Aid, I think, sells. So... TV writer Brian.
I didn't even know that they sold toilet paper. To me, it's always just been the condom store.
Yeah, that's the aid in Rite Aid. The right is the toilet paper.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, TV writer Brian Bahar tweeted that the Rite Aid pharmacy employee had achieved what Hans Gruber, whom we talked about last week on Die Hard, achieved what Hans Gruber could not, which was tossing Bruce Willis out of the building. End quote. I thought that was pretty funny.
That is pretty hilarious.
So just a quick reminder as to what we do here. We discuss each of the films starring Bruce Willis or having Bruce Willis play a major role in them. And we're going through them chronologically. So this is our fourth episode and fourth movie. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at williswaypod@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at williswaypod. And as we said at the top, we're going to be talking about the movie In Country. And like we always do, we are going to dive into spoilers pretty much from the beginning. I think this movie is an interesting movie to talk about. And so if you are spoiler averse and you're interested in seeing this movie, I would recommend pausing here. Josh and I will remain frozen for the duration. Go watch the movie.
Yeah, we'll go into stasis.
And come back and hit play so we can keep talking.
God, you miss everything. And you were just a country boy. And you never knew me.
You're never gonna understand it. You don't want to.
Well, I wanna know about it.
I got the ride.
Come on, all of a sudden you gotta know about Vietnam.
Did you get sprayed with Agent Orange over there, Emmett?
Why? Something wrong with Emmett?
I believe my body was entered into by aliens and I was transported.
Talk to me, Emmett.
Whew. Man, the carbon freezing always gets to me.
I'm laughing.
Anyways. I've got quite a few thoughts on this movie, and I know that you've got some stuff that you wanted to talk about too. I guess just maybe getting this out there, have you seen this movie before today or whenever you watched it, or is this your first time?
This was my first time, and actually I hadn't ever heard of this movie before we started this podcast.
Yep. Yeah, I'm the same way. I had no idea what this movie was. And I think part of that has to do with some of the way that it was received, which we can talk about later. But yeah, I hadn't heard about it. And then I went and looked up this director's other credits, and he's done some other kind of famous stuff. I knew him from Jesus Christ Superstar, oddly enough, which is not an extremely popular movie, but it does have a lot of people that have seen it. Just because it's a very theatery thing to watch. But yeah, it was interesting. I ended up, I think, liking this more than I was expecting that I would, not knowing anything about it going in.
The director, Norman Jewison, also directed Fiddler on the Roof, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Wow. I must have scrolled right on past that. I'm silly Billy.
I'm with you, though. I was pleasantly surprised, and I expected to be very disgruntled with this movie, but I ended up more on the gruntled side.
Yeah, taking the diss out of disgruntled.
Yeah. So the IMDb description for this movie is a fairly straightforward plot. It is a young woman whose father died in the Vietnam War becomes determined to find more about him and his experiences. I rented this movie on VOD. It's available on almost all VOD services. And I think we can't talk about this movie without talking about Vietnam in film in general. So when I think of Vietnam movies, I think of Apocalypse Now or Platoon or more recently To Five Bloods. And they all each are some of the most well-known movies of all time, and they have a lot to say about the war in general. And I think it was hard watching this movie knowing that it was about Vietnam and hadn't been mentioned in those films' discourse. I think that's one of the reasons I had such a low expectation, is I was expecting it to kind of not do a good job talking about the war and how veterans react, and things like that. What's your feeling in general on, do you have a general feeling on Vietnam War movies or war movies in general?
Yeah. So, you know, I've actually got a pretty pretty bad record with Vietnam movies, and I am fairly confident that the only Vietnam movie I've ever seen is Tropic Thunder, which is a parody of war movies, and I didn't get tons of mileage out of that movie, and that might be part of the problem that I haven't seen a whole lot of war movies in general. So yeah, I didn't have a ton of experience with it, anything like that before watching this.
Well, that's good, I guess, that it didn't cloud your feelings. I think this movie is not a Vietnam War movie in the sense of any of those other movies, and I think that's to the movie's credit. It's more of a Americana kind of slice of life almost story. Roger Ebert's review says, quote, Norman Jewison's In Country is constructed like a short story, not a novel. It sneaks up with a series of incidents from daily life, moments that don't seem to be leading anywhere in particular until we're blindsided by the surprising emotional impact of the closing scene. And we will definitely get to that closing scene later. But I'm curious, what did you think this movie's view on war and America in general was?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting because, like, right at the beginning of the movie, when it has, like, that flashback sequence to Sam's dad, Dwayne? No. What is his character's name? It is Dwayne, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, when it does, like, the flashback sequence, it feels almost like a heightened and parody-esque version of, like, kind of what you're talking about, the Americana and like America's the greatest hoorah sort of attitude. But I don't really feel like they talk about that a whole lot. They don't necessarily make the Vietnam War seem, in my opinion, they don't really make it seem like it was something that was a totally just war, but they also don't seem to take the other side of it being a absolute travesty that we were there. I kind of feel like they just treat it as a thing that happened, and certain characters see the war differently throughout it. I was almost a little bit bummed that they didn't take the more anti-war approach to it, because especially with Vietnam, it is a very easy approach to take because it was such a fiasco throughout. But I didn't really feel like the movie wanted to declare one way or the other how we, the audience, were supposed to feel about it, other than that there was a lot of shitty things that happened in said war. But that could just be my perspective too.
Yeah, I agree. And the director was Canadian, I believe. And I think that influenced his outlook. That opening flashback you talked about has a moment when someone's kind of celebrating the troops as they're getting onto airplanes to fly over to Vietnam. And I don't know if it's maybe our current state of affairs or what, but I thought it was almost parody in the way he celebrated those troops going over there. He says, you are America's the greatest, you are America's greatest asset, something to that effect. And then he says, I love you, America loves you. I thought this movie was going, I was like, that seems like a strange thing to say. And then shortly after that scene, we're seeing our main character, played by Emily Lloyd, jogging through a Confederate cemetery. And it was kind of, it's obvious the camera kind of pans over the name Confederate Cemetery. And again, this may be kind of our current lens looking back on that. But those two things kind of gave me this expectation of it coming out as much more against the war. But you're right, it treats the war as just a fact of life and something that these veterans all kind of have to live with.
Yeah, I don't know where I land on that. I guess I might be partially disappointed by that, because I feel like if there's ever an opportunity to say something great and you don't say that, you are essentially wasting that opportunity. But I guess it wasn't in this movie's wheelhouse. It wasn't what they wanted to portray. They were focused on Emily's character, Sam, throughout it. So I guess that's what they wanted to do, and that's fine. It just was personally a little bit of a bummer.
Speaking of Emily, what did you think of her character, Samantha?
I don't know. I'm a little torn on it. All of like the slice of life stuff kind of relies on you totally getting with her character. And I didn't feel like her character was necessarily as fleshed out as it could have been. I get that it's kind of like a coming of age movie in a way for her, but I didn't really feel like the movie necessarily knew where her starting point was and then what the end of her journey was and how to make those things happen in between. Some of that, her character growth felt maybe a little bit stilted to me from a script's perspective. I thought that she was great in it, but some of the overarching plots and how they got to those points didn't really work for me personally. But I also could just be kind of evaluating it against really well-received coming-of-age movies like Heathers, which has a very particular journey that her character goes on. I just didn't feel as much with Emily's character, and that might also be because I'm a guy in 2021 trying to relate to a girl character in 1989. I'm from the Northwest and she's from the South, and so maybe there's just too many differences to where we just didn't connect on that wavelength, but I wasn't really ever feeling what she was feeling, I felt.
Yeah, I'm probably right there with you. I loved her presence, and I thought her accent work was really good. She's originally from the UK, and so she was obviously hiding her British accent and doing a Kentucky accent, and I thought that was all really good. I thought the atmosphere...
Yeah, I didn't detect that she was, like, not American at all.
Yeah,
I was
either.
Floored my roommate told me that. I was like, oh my God, her accent's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the whole aspect of Kentucky felt really natural, and I know it was filmed in Kentucky, and the book was written in Kentucky, so the vibe of Kentucky felt really good, and I enjoyed watching her go through those different vignettes or short stories, as Roger Ebert called it, of her friend's pregnancy and whether or not she wants to go to college and taking care of her uncle and figuring out more about her dad and her boyfriend. I thought that was enjoyable, but I didn't ever really care one way or the other.
Yeah. I felt like she and her boyfriend could get married and that would be fine, or they could break up and that would be fine. I'm right there with you. I didn't necessarily feel like I was really invested in any particular outcome for her story, which I don't feel is what you want something about a coming of age movie where you're supposed to be really connected to this character. So that was a bit of a bummer. Part of me wonders if maybe it comes off better in the book and it just wasn't captured as well on screen, or where that disconnect happened, because I'd be interested in this told maybe in a way that I connected to a little bit more, but that could also just be a me thing, and I'm so different in all these different ways from Sam that maybe it's just not a story that's meant for me, and so the fact that I don't connect to it is fine.
Yeah, and I don't know if I've seen Emily Lloyd in anything else, but I would definitely watch her again. I think the performance she gives is good. I'm just not sure on kind of the direction she's given. Another thing that I found interesting was her sexuality is often kind of a thread that runs from plot to plot. And I found it interesting that she kind of has ownership of her sexuality and... knows what she wants and doesn't ever feel regretful. We don't ever see her experience regret or shame or rebuttal on any of the choices she makes, whether it's with her boyfriend or anyone else. And I thought that was interesting. I thought it was also kind of unnecessary in parts. She's often viewed as hypersexualized. I know she's, what is she just graduated high school at the beginning of the movie. I don't feel like it added anything, and I wasn't sure what the message I was supposed to come away with those moments. Some of them I think added flavor to the scene, but there are others that just felt kind of cringy.
Yeah, especially that one sequence where, and this is probably more of a scripting thing, but when they're at the like diner and all of the Vietnam vets are like hitting on her and stuff, I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, one guy like squeezes in next to her and goes, "You're the best thing I've smelled all week."
Yeah.
After she had just been jogging through the hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a lot of scenes where she's,
oh man,
she's jogging and people like honk and kind of catcall, and she just kind of waves and goes on with it.
Yeah. And there's like an interesting director's choice too, because when they're going, it's Sam and her friends. I can't remember what this friend's name is, but they go to get a pregnancy test, and there's maybe like a 10-second shot of them walking. And as they're walking, it's just focused on their butt. The entire, like, walk from wherever they were coming from to the store. So I feel like the movie wants you to have maybe a certain perspective. But if it's supposed to be from her perspective, it just doesn't really work when you do that, make that choice to sexualize the character in that way. So I don't really know if that was something where they just weren't necessarily thinking it through, or if I didn't get the message that they were trying to go for, or what that was all about.
Yeah, it's in a weird place of not being quite male gazey enough that I feel like it was trying to have that, and it doesn't. And the fact that she kind of has command over her sexual choices doesn't ever really pay off there either. And mm-hmm. Maybe it's another thing that is fleshed out more in the book. That pregnancy test scene, though, was when they're in the pharmacy buying it, was one of the moments I laughed out loud. They have to do a price check, and these old women are just
in like this
all
small
turning.
Town.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great. So good. Yeah, that was kind of like where the movie started to pick me up a little bit more, because like you're saying, there is just a lot of little vignettes and little slices of life that you're seeing. And I feel like I know the town pretty well. I don't really know what Sam's character is always thinking about, other than her single-minded focus, which is to find out more about her dad and who her dad was and what her dad was like and everything like that. So throughout the movie, it kind of varies how entertaining everything is based on the quality of that little vignette, that little rabbit trail that you go down. And then every once in a while they tick off another check mark along the main story. So I can definitely see where they took the book and then they turned it into the movie, because I can envision each of those little moments being a chapter of the book, and I haven't read it yet, so it could be totally different than that. It could be chapters that go on and on and on. But in my mind, I'm seeing maybe 10 or so pages per chapter, and it's just a lot of chapters in these books, in this book, that kind of explores the different areas of her life. But I don't know that necessarily all of those are that important. And part of me feels like this movie was a little bit long. And maybe what needed to happen is they needed to cut out a chapter or two throughout it. Or you could tighten up how some of the scenes are going. I don't know. Some of the scenes felt fine, but overall the movie just felt like it dragged a little.
I agree. The movie did have a shaggy feel. I think it came in just over 2 hours. Something that occurred to me just as we're talking, I think this movie would have made a better miniseries where maybe it's 5 episodes and each episode focuses on Samantha and another character. So you have an episode maybe where she's talking to the other veterans, and her episode with her boyfriend, an episode with her friend, an episode with her mom. Just a little bit longer on each of those, I think would be great. And actually pretty interesting. We're kind of in a resurgence in the last few years of 80s nostalgia, Stranger Things being the prime example. But I think some of the stuff from the 80s that we don't really think about, I was born in the 80s, but I don't really have any conscious memory of it. I think, for example, that pregnancy test we talked about, you needed so much pee for that pregnancy test.
Yeah, my roommate and I were talking about that. It just looked like this whole alchemy sequence going on as they're having to use the little dropper and everything. It was like, oh, my God.
Wow, that is like a lot, as opposed to modern day pregnancy tests. You just, there's just a stick. You don't have to
a lot easier.
Fill up a tank and go run some lab tests.
Heated on a 140 for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Definitely a lot easier. Yeah. And just the open cup of pee on the bed and friend slams down on the bed. I'm like, oh no.
Yeah. I was so grossed out. That must just be me.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't carried around a glass of piss through my house. So maybe that's one of those things where it's a relatability issue. And
that's why you didn't connect
tests in the '80s. Yeah, people took pregnancy tests in the '80s and probably like, so true.
Yeah.
And I just don't get it.
Another thing in this movie that I thought didn't really have a lot of payoff was its views on religion. So there are two specific scenes, one of which Samantha again goes jogging past church and it's just letting out service. And we see people coming out of the church dressed like you would to go to church, and they come out and they see her, and the camera kind of pans and she's wearing her running outfit, nylon shirt and shorts, and the people in church kind of are eyeing her with disdain as this, you know, young woman runs by sweaty and with headphones on while they're all in church. And then the other scene is when she's eating with her grandparents. They make a point of her starting to eat before the prayer, and then everyone kind of stops and looks at her, and then they pray. Again, I don't feel like this movie had anything to say about religion in general. I think those were some flavor moments, but they stood out to me because of the lack of saying anything. I think even if there had been a line about how maybe Bruce Willis's character, Emmett, believes that religion brainwashes the masses and or something to that effect, but nothing really is ever said that I thought.
Yeah. Emmett does kind of almost sound like he might be talking to God when he's up in the tree yelling at the lightning storm. I wasn't sure who he was supposed to be yelling at, but that's kind of what it felt like to me. But also the movie doesn't say anything about religion. It just kind of introduces it as an idea that Sam isn't really associated with, but then it doesn't really do anything with that. And so I guess if you already have a movie that maybe feels a little bit long and you just bring up an idea and you don't pay it off, probably just want to cut those ideas a little bit sooner rather than leaving them in and then leaving these juicy, potentially juicy little threads dangling down and not doing anything with them. But Yeah. One thing that I also wanted to talk about, since we talked a little bit about how long this movie is, there is a Bruce Springsteen song that plays in this movie. And I'm guessing that they probably paid old Brucey for playing this song in the movie. And then they go, okay, well, since we already paid for it, how about we use this same song 3 times? So they use the same Bruce Springsteen song 3 times throughout it, which is, I think, I want to say World on Fire, Bruce Springsteen. Yeah, okay, so Bruce Springsteen, I'm on Fire. They play that song three times. Every time she's jogging, they play it. And then there's so much Bruce Springsteen fangirling throughout this movie. And it's got to be intentional, but I don't know why. Like, Sam says, "Oh, Dad, you've missed so many things," as she's kind of just talking to herself. "You've missed the Watergate, E.T., Bruce Springsteen concert." And then she has, you know, all three things that have happened between 1972 and 1989. And then she has a Bruce Springsteen concert poster, and she has a full, like, Bruce Springsteen himself person as a poster board poster as well. So that is in total six references to Bruce Springsteen throughout the movie. I was so confused as to why he is mentioned so many times. And in looking it up, I think that part of it might have been that he apparently was a big part about doing some rehabilitation for Vietnam vets, but it does seem like it's a lot of Bruce Springsteen references in the movie.
I mean, Bruce Springsteen, you know, big deal, I think, in general, and I have no doubt that teenage girls in the 80s were all over Bruce Springsteen. I thought that when she's kind of talking to her dad and she's like, "Dad, you missed a Bruce Springsteen concert." I thought that moment was kind of sweet and seemed realistic. I totally missed the cardboard cutout. And it didn't occur to me that they replayed that song repeatedly. I thought that the score in general was one of the weaker points of this movie. It didn't really bother me that much. It just didn't stand out at all.
I think I read in a review, somebody said that the score was offensive, and I go, "Well, I don't know about offensive, but it wasn't a slam dunk or anything like that." But there was a lot of Bruce Springsteen in it. Maybe she's just got that one song on her Sony Walkman. That's her one jogging song. I don't know.
I love that Sony Walkman, but man, I'm glad I don't have to use one of those to go jogging.
Yeah. No kidding. Can you imagine what it was like jogging with, like, did they have, like, portable 8-track players where you have to carry that whole thing around?
I don't know. Probably not. Can you imagine the amount of batteries you would need to run that thing?
Like 7D batteries.
Yeah, yeah.
40-pound backpack you gotta wear to play stuff.
I used to have a mobile computer CD player that I would use to play music, and it needed... Yeah. 9 AA batteries. The thing was huge.
Oh. Yeah, I had one of those, but I think it only needed 4 AA batteries. So technology had really advanced by 2005, 2004, whenever I got that. Didn't have enough money for the Zune or the iPod, so CDs it was. Yeah, so... Another thing I wanted to talk about was the money. So, based on this movie and your watching of it, do you think this movie did pretty well or do you think it did pretty badly?
So, I looked at the Rotten Tomatoes, which we have mentioned in episodes past that did not exist back when this movie came out. So, it has gone back and compiled old reviews and put it together, and the audience score, I don't know how it gets its data, but the Rotten Tomatoes was in the upper 60s, I want to say, but the audience score was pretty low, which I think is a fairly rare occurrence to have the audience score lower than the critic score.
Yeah, unless it's like a Last Jedi fan backlash sort of scenario.
Sure. I know this movie premiered at a film festival, I want to say Toronto, and I'm guessing was probably a fairly small budget. I didn't look this up ahead of time, so I'm just guessing, but I'm guessing it was probably made its money back.
Yeah, it's a good guess, but unfortunately it is a little bit more tricky than that. So the budget for this movie was $18 million, and I can't remember what Sunset's budget was. I want to say that was about $30 million based on what I remember, and I'm going to go look it up right now just so I can be sure. but I think that it was around that much. Let's see. So Sunset was 19 million and it only made 4.6 million back. This movie, on the other hand, was 18 million. So almost cost as much as Sunset did with all their crazy sets and costumes and everything that they had in Sunset. And this movie only made 3.5 million back.
Wow.
So it lost basically five times as much as it made. And I think part of that might have just been a pretty limited release, but it also just didn't get watched a whole lot, unfortunately. So it didn't make tons and tons of money back. I looked it up because I was curious, but Bruce Willis was commanding an estimated $5 million or so salary per movie that he was in. But for In Country, he wanted to do it so bad that he took it on a pay scale, which basically means that he was going to get a certain percentage of the profits of the movie. So I think that he got paid probably next to nothing for this movie, which is super, super fascinating to me. Coming off of Die Hard, the fact that he does this movie next and it just makes like nothing and he gets like nothing out of it. And so then kind of sent me down a little rabbit hole about this movie. And I was reading about it and Bruce Willis said, quote, "I had something to prove to myself for this movie. And in order to play the role, he had to gain 30 pounds, stain his teeth, and grow his hair out like that, in addition to the facial hair that he has throughout the movie, which is a lot." And he said, as of, but he said in 1990 that this was his favorite film that he's worked on.
He said that in 1990?
Yeah, 1990. I can't find anything more recent with him talking about it. I think this movie has kind of faded into obscurity, but at the time and shortly thereafter, he talked very highly of this movie, even though it was not economically received super great, which I think is a bummer because I think that there's some really good stuff in this movie. Even though we've talked about a lot of our problems, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that I like quite a bit. One of it is Bruce Willis's performance, which we'll get to later. All the rest of the performances in general are really good. The whole theme of PTSD, I think, is handled pretty respectfully. And the town and the setting are all just great. But yeah, this movie, for whatever reason, just didn't rake in any money at all.
That's really interesting. And I will have more to say when we get to talk about Bruce Willis specifically. But the view of Vietnam veterans in general, and as you mentioned, PTSD, I thought was really fascinating. And it kind of goes back to what we were saying around its views on the war and America in general. And it kind of creates a rounded group of comrades. There's a right wing and a left wing guy, and both of them get into a fight, and then they have like an emotional moment where they hug at this dance. And there's a scene at the end of that dance that really stuck with me, where Samantha comes back the next day to help kind of clean up. This is the dance. I'm referring to the dance celebrating Vietnam War veterans or just veterans in general. Actually, quick aside, there's a couple of old guys in that scene, and one of them's in a wheelchair and the other one's pushing him around. Would that have been World War One veterans, I assume? People, if you're that old in 1980s...
Yeah, that could have been World War II, presumably.
I guess if you were older and if you're like an older World War II, because that would have been 50 years prior? 45.
Yeah, 45 years prior.
So if you're in your, if you're in your late 20s when you served in World War II. But anyway, at the end of that, she comes back, Samantha does, to help kind of clean up, and she talks to the guy who put it on. And he talks about how no one came to the event that wasn't, quote unquote, in country. and how mm-hmm. they're kind of being forgotten. Unless you yeah. served, no one really cares about the vets. And we haven't really talked about the name of this movie, In Country, and they actually say it quite a lot. I think compared to all of yeah. our other Bruce Willis movies, no other movie has said the title out loud at all.
Can you imagine if in Die Hard, Bruce Willis and every bad guy's like, well, looks like you just gotta die hard, motherfucker, and he like guns him down. That would be terrible.
I'm guessing yeah, at some point in Blind Date, they say Blind Date, but...
Probably. Yeah,
so in Country refers to people who went to Vietnam itself and the country being Vietnam. And I thought that moment was really moving and
mm-hmm.
just all the kind of arranged experiences. Since this movie came out, we've had, you know, another 30 plus years to create Vietnam war movies. And I think that war specifically has created a lot of stories around PTSD. And mm-hmm. this was kind of on that early start.
Yeah. Partially, wasn't that because of all of the chemical warfare that was going on in Vietnam?
Yeah, I mean, there's political implications, there's the amount of people who died, there's the fact that the you're right, Agent Orange, which is mentioned in the beginning of this movie, and
yeah.
Just its impact on people.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like maybe more than any other war that the U.S. has been involved in, I feel like I hear a lot about the Vietnam War in the media a lot more than most other wars, because I think a lot of the other wars and conflicts that the U.S. has been involved in, we got into them with feels like the majority of the country backing the U.S. And then the Vietnam is one of those where the perspective of the U.S. just really soured throughout it. And I think people pretty much immediately after the war were very, very vocal about how bad it was. So it's a pretty easy conflict in the U.S. history to have a negative opinion of and make movies about, it feels like. So that's probably a good reason why we end up seeing so many different pieces of media about it.
A couple other quick hits here before we switch over to talk about Bruce Willis's specific role in this movie. One of the veterans that he's friends with is played by the actor Stephen Tobolowsky. I believe his character's name is Pete.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he's a character actor who's been in almost every movie. I think his IMDb yeah. gives his page 275 acting credits, and
wow,
it's always a delight to kind of stumble across a role of his. Quick shout out, there's a podcast called The Tobolowsky Files where he just narrates stories from his life, growing up in Texas, moving to California to become an actor, kind of making it on his own acting, and super fascinating. A really interesting guy. Had no idea he was in this before starting this movie, and just was a delight to see.
Yep.
So that leaves our Star Trek connection. Now, Josh, when we started this podcast back years ago in 2020, did we plan on finding a Star Trek connection in every episode?
No, that was just something that happened in Blind Date and Sunset. So we figured, you know, it might as well make it into a whole thing at this point.
And this one, I was a little worried after setting a precedent in Die Hard that we would have to go to the deep cuts of someone played the oboe in one of the songs or something. But actually,
yeah, no offense to oboe players, but.
Yeah. And this one is quite straightforward, actually.
Yeah, it is. So the world's favorite Ken Jenkins of Scrubs fame is in this movie. He plays the guy that is organizing the dance. And he is also the guy that plays Dwayne's real life dad. Apparently they weren't cast together. It was just something that ended up happening. But he is, yeah, he's got a connection with the within this movie that's weird. But Ken Jenkins is in Star Trek The Next Generation, and he plays a doctor named Dr. Paul Stubbs. And if you Google Dr. Paul Stubbs, you will see a smarmy-ass-looking face on a Star Trek Memory Alpha page, and it is definitely worth looking up. Fun fact about that character, his mom's name is Stubbs' mother, so go look that up if you want to deep dive into some Star Trek-ian type stuff. Cool. So you want to talk about Bruce Willis's performance?
I sure do. So Bruce Willis plays Emmett, which is the uncle of Samantha. And this movie is definitely Samantha's movie. And actually, I think
totally
more so than any of the movies we've done so far, Bruce Willis is not kind of the center of the film. And I think I was thinking this is kind of his take on more of an art house slash indie film. He's done the action film with Die Hard. He's done the comedies with Blind Date and Sunset. And now he's kind of rounding out his portfolio with this emotional, moving role playing Emmett.
Yeah.
One of the questions I had, and I thought I knew the answer, but then I got to the end and I still had it, is how is he related to Samantha? Is he her mom's brother?
I would have to assume so, because he doesn't seem like he is the son of the grandparents that are in the movie. And that's the only other way that he can be related as far as I know.
Yeah, well, so they definitely make it clear that he's her uncle, and she lives with him because her mom's away in Lexington. And I thought for the most part of the movie that she was her dad's brother, and she kind of pulls out when she finds the letters at the beginning. She's like, you want to read these? And I thought, you know, they're brothers. They both went to Vietnam together. But then when they view her grandparents, who were her grandparents on her dad's side, she calls them like Mr. and Mrs., you know, whatever, Smith, or yeah, Mr. and Mrs. grandparent. Yeah. And they never really made it clear that she was her mom's brother. So I was just kind of like, did I miss something here? Like, what's going on? But
Don't they have the same last name, though?
Good question. I don't know. Do we ever find out anyone's last name in this movie?
Yeah, you find out.
They're cast Emmett Smith and Samantha Hughes, so they don't have the same last name.
Oh, what? Is the Samantha Hughes is her mom's name?
That's probably her. That's probably her dad's name, because she was her mom. Her parents probably had the same last name before her dad died.
Oh, shit! You're so right. Yeah, I forgot about how siblings' names work. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah, I think that must be the explanation, that it's Samantha's uncle on her mom's side.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. So this character is got a lot of interesting characteristics around about him. We talked about his hair. His mustache is...
Yeah.
Extremely distracting. I
so distracting.
Could not stop staring at it every time he came on screen. It was so just there.
Yeah. His mustache has a lot to say throughout this movie, I feel.
his and you mentioned that he had to gain weight and grow his hair out. I don't know off the top of my head of another movie that has Bruce Willis with long hair. Much to his benefit.
I cannot think of anything.
I'm hoping he keeps that.
Yeah, I was joking with my roommate after watching this movie that, like, after this movie, he goes, all right, fuck it, I'm only going bald for the rest of my movies. This is too much
work. Right. Yeah. There was a scene where he wears a skirt while he cooks dinner, and he briefly mentions about it being mainly to wear a skirt, but it's never really brought up again.
Just because they wanted to get the one up on Harry Styles by doing it first.
I think this movie has some interesting ideas around the traumas coming out of war that it doesn't come back and touch on. So it talks about kind of his fear of, or not fear, but discomfort of medicine. And not wanting to go to the doctor. And then when they go to the kind of like drive through doctor or whatever that little clinic is, how he's unhappy with what he gets. And he's dealing with some medical issues that we're never really sure. It's joked about, you know, is it Agent Orange or not? Or is it the fact that he lives with a cat and has an allergic rash on him? Same with the skirt. And him kind of talking about it. Do you think that this does a good job of kind of showing the multifaceted aspects of what PTSD would look like? Or do you think it pays off all these little tidbits?
I think for the year that it was made, it did a pretty good job with it. And I think also that ending scene really works pretty well in its favor for tying everything together with his character. So I think it does pay it off.
Did you have anything you wanted to say before we got to the ending scene about Bruce Willis's performance in general?
I don't think so, no. I mean, I guess the other thing with regard to Bruce Willis is I came into this movie, I think, really underestimating how his dramatic chops, basically. I thought that he was just really great in this movie and very convincing. And I was going to mention earlier, he even won a Golden Globe for this movie. So it was definitely something that he got recognized for. And it's kind of odd to me considering that it's faded into obscurity, because I think that he's pretty great in it. And if you're a big Bruce Willis fan, it's probably worth watching just because I think he does a really great job in it.
Totally agree. I would definitely recommend anyone watch this film. I think it was well worth the time, even though, as we talked about it, it dragged on a little too long. I was right there with you in that there's a lot of his comedy shown in this movie. He makes kind of funny quips as he's cooking or digging out his basement, trying to get the drain the leaks in the foundation. And I thought he plays that kind of wittiness really well, but his dramatic moments, the moment you mentioned of crying out to the storm, or the scene at the dance where he's struggling with kind of reconnecting with people, I thought really well done. And definitely am glad that he got an award for it.
Yeah, I'd say that scene also where he comes up to Sam when she's out at the campfire by the lake was also really good.
So let's talk about the end. The end of this movie, Samantha and Emmett convince Samantha's grandma to go to the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C. And
yep, in Washington, D.C. We'll come back to that.
There's a great line where her grandmother, played by Peggy Ray, says, "I've never left my time zone," which I thought was just a hilarious way of saying that I've never really gone anywhere. DC's in the same time zone, I believe, is the part of Kentucky they're in. So unless I'm mistaken, she still can't claim traveling out of her time zone. But
that's pretty funny.
This scene where they go to the Vietnam War Memorial and they find her dad's name there, I thought was really moving. And like the Roger Ebert review kind of we read at the top, I didn't know kind of the emotional investment that I had made in watching all these little bits. And so this movie is the first Bruce Willis movie we've seen to make me tear up. Mark it down.
Well, I don't know where I'm going to mark that down, but if I was keeping track of it, I would.
What did you think of that end?
Yeah, I thought it was really great. Yeah.
I cry in movies pretty frequently, so we probably will have the cry meter to see whether or not I teared up or not.
Every single time there's a sad scene, I'll be like, "Well, Kendrick, did this movie make you cry?" And then go from there.
Yeah. It's not a sure thing. It's not a sure thing.
I guess one of the things that made me maybe a little bit disconnected from it was because there were two things that I was thinking about during this end sequence. And it still was very moving for me, don't get me wrong. But two things were distracting me. The first thing was the fact that they do probably the most interesting thing throughout the entire movie with regard to filming in that scene, and that they film a lot of the scene through the reflection of the monument. And that was really cool and something that they hadn't really gone and done super crazy stuff with the camera throughout that movie. So when they started doing that, I was going, "Oh my God, I'm now so distracted by it." The other thing that I was distracted by was I kept going, "Shit, this is like a real to-do monument. How do they get this character's name up on the monument?" I'm going to guess that they're going to like cut away and then they'll show like a little tiny bit of a monument that they made for the movie. And then I was looking it up because I was so curious about it right after the end of the movie. But I was distracted by those two things, so it kind of broke the suspense for me a little bit. But do you know what they ended up doing, how they got Dwayne's name to appear on the monument?
So I also had this thought, and I had similar thoughts around tricks they might do. But my guess was that they used a real veteran's name to write this story, that the book was maybe based off of someone whose actual name was on there. But tell me.
Yeah, that would be something that you would do maybe in a world where you traveled to there and then you decided to come up with a name on there. But no, they didn't do that at all. They actually were restricted from filming the actual monument. So that entire monument scene, it is a replica that they built for this movie.
Wow.
Yeah. So earlier I said, "You know what? This movie cost $18 million. Where the fuck did it all go?" Apparently it all went there to building like this real to do monument replica at the end of the movie. And so that just blew me away. I could not believe that at all. It was so shocking to me.
That's great. One of the things I think I forgot to mention was how this movie was actually filmed on location for the most part in Kentucky. And I think that really helps add to the vibes. I have been to the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C. When I was a young lad. But that is quite an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, I have no idea how much that would have cost to like put that all together and the reflective surfaces. So I don't know if that was something that they commissioned and actually had people chiseling out little bits to make it look like names, or how you even go about doing something of that scale just to make it as a replica. but it's a pretty important scene in the movie, and so you have to get it right, and they did get it right. It just blows me away that they went to that length. One other thing that I kind of want to say about the ending, too, is that unfortunately the trailer for the movie, or not the trailer, the poster for the movie shows that ending sequence on the poster, which is a bummer because I feel like that kind of cuts into the emotional moment of you seeing it, because you don't know that that's necessarily going to happen when you first start out this movie. And so if you're going to go watch this movie, guess it's already been spoiled for you, so it's too late. But a finger wag to Warner Bros. For having the poster be that and spoiling that moment.
See, one thing I was going to bring up the poster also, because I, when I watched this, had a totally different poster in my my VOD screen, and it's one of just Bruce Willis's face kind of over top some soldiers in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I expected this movie to be much more about being in Vietnam and a lot more of the setting in Vietnam. And so I think also kind of colored my expectations.
Yeah.
But funny how,
and I don't think you ever see Bruce Willis in Vietnam in the movie.
I don't think so either. You see her dad's set in Vietnam as she's kind of envisioning what he would have looked like there.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Any other final closing thoughts on In Country before we move on?
Yeah, and we can edit this out later if we want to, but I read one of the reviews that said that this movie felt a little bit stagey, quote unquote, and I definitely can get behind what they're talking about. So I would be really interested to see this as an actual stage play. You'd have to do a lot of conversions, but I think that the subject matter is one that could be very interesting, and telling it from the teenager's perspective would be a great way to kind of dive into this whole story. I'm interested in this story, and I don't know if I'm interested enough to read the book, but I think that it's a really interesting concept, and there's a lot of stuff in this movie to like.
Yeah, and I think several of the movies we've talked about so far have been based on books. I know Die Hard was, and I think either Sunset or Blind Date both were.
I think
were,
Sunset was.
If I'm not mistaken. But of what we've seen, this is probably the first time that I was like, I would read this book. This book seems interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right, so where would you rank it in what we've seen so far?
Yeah, so just to recap, we've watched in order Blind Date, Sunset, Die Hard, and In Country. And I had previously ranked them Die Hard, Sunset, and Blind Date. And I would put this at my number two. So my order is Die Hard, In Country, Sunset, and Blind Date.
Nice. I have almost the exact same feelings. My original lineup had been Die Hard, then Blind Date, and then Sunset, and I put In Country also in number two. And actually, I feel like Die Hard has got a lot of layers to it, and I think has a lot more discussion because of its pop culture impact. But mm-hmm. In Country, if it weren't for that, I think I would probably like In Country more.
Yeah, I think I like the action elements of Die Hard a little bit more than I like the kind of slow, methodical build-up of In Country. But I liked In Country more than I thought that I would. And the first half of the movie is pretty slow, but I think overall it is a good payoff.
All right, let's move on to the Wheel of Willis. Listener, if this is your first time, the Wheel of Willis is what we spin to determine how Willis wields his will.
All right. And before we spin it, we always say the same thing, which is whisk that wheel. So we're gonna whisk it, and it's whisking. All right. And today's question is, if Bruce Willis was half as tall in this movie, would it be better or worse?
I'm gonna say better.
Better?
Yeah.
You think so? Yeah.
Yeah, because he's down under that under his house a lot digging, you know?
That would be pretty great. I don't know that I would... There would be maybe a lack of believability that... like, 2.5 foot tall Bruce Willis got sent over to Vietnam. But maybe. I'd have to look up, like, what the shortest vet is. That's a... That is a point of curiosity for me right now.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to say that the movie would be more interesting, but probably worse. But that'll be my take.
Fair assumption. All right, well, that was The Wheel of Willis. If you have a idea for an entry to add on to The Wheel of Willis, you can email us at williswaypod@gmail.com. All right. Well, I think we're almost wrapped up with this episode. I want to remind everyone that if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that would be great. And actually, here in probably a few episodes, we're going to be reading all of our reviews on air. So I'd pretty much say almost anything you wrote in a review. And
yep.
So now's your chance. If you want to get me to read something, you go ahead and leave it in a review of Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, within reason, I will say.
Yeah, I guess if it says, like, Josh likes farts or something, that's probably too far.
Ugh. Yeah, that's a bridge too far. Yeah, but we did get a piece of email that I am going to read off. Once again, if you guys want to shoot us an email, you can send us an email at williswaypod@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @WillisWaypod. And if you tweet at us, we'll respond to you and it'll make our day because we check the email every once in a while, more than we should. But we did get this piece of email, so I was going to read it out to everybody. So this email, and I'm not going to read out last names because I don't want to out anybody or anything like that. But this email is from Amanda. And the email is as follows. Good dash day. I am Amanda. Please, can I talk to you now? Very important. So thanks, Amanda, for sending us that. That was really special. We'll cherish that email forever. Or we would if I didn't accidentally delete it just a little bit ago.
Yeah, I saved it though, Amanda. Don't worry.
Yeah, Kendrick's got your back. Yeah, once again, if you guys want to follow us, we're at Willis Waypod. You can find me, Josh, on Twitter at @JoshingCarter.
And you can find me, Kendrick, on Twitter at @KMartinix. That's KMARTINIX. And you can see all my other work at kmartinix.com. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Where There's a Willis, There's a Way. Tune in next week, where we'll be talking about the movie Look Who's Talking.
Sounds great. See you next time.